Seeing under proposals, deer hunting seasons. We have Andrew Norton with us and Andy Lindblom. Welcome to both of you.
Madam Chair, before we go into the next proposals, Andy Lindblom and Andrew Norton have a short presentation that I see Andy's going to take the lead on to share some information with you. And we'll at minimum get through that. If this goes relatively quick, we can jump into the proposal sheet then as well, because we do want to provide this before we actually get into the proposal. So we can see how time flies. Not, then we'll just proceed right into the public hearing. We'll inform and we'll pick this up then at the appropriate time. So.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roble, Andy Lindblom here. I'm Senior Big Game Biologist out of Rapid City. And yeah, today I'm here to provide some updates on our deer population objectives and deer disease in the state in particular. I'm going to focus on chronic wasting disease. Next. So I'll just jump right into it here and start with chronic wasting disease first. Just a little reminder. For some of you, or maybe new news as well, we do have a CWD action plan, which outlines what we do as an agency and guides our management actions relative to chronic wasting disease in the state. The updates that I'm providing today on sampling and research, these efforts are aimed at addressing some of the objectives that we actually outline in the management plan. Next. So just looking first at what we did for deer sampling last year, in the year 2022. For whitetail deer, we collected a little over 500 samples. Of those 500, 23 were positive. And for mule deer, we had 84 samples and 11 positives out of that. Next. And we did detect CWD in one new area last year. That's down in the southeast corner of the state, down there in Union County. So looking at CWD now on elk, we do have a research project that we just initiated this last year. It's titled Evaluating Novel Methods for Testing Chronic Wasting Disease Status of Elk and Assessing the Impacts of CWD on our elk populations in the Black Hills. Next. We do have three primary objectives that we're looking at for this research project. The first one is that we're going to evaluate a new testing method for trying to assess if an animal has CWD. And that's by looking at samples from the ear pinna or the outer ear. There's been some promising research on this in white-tailed deer where they've been able to detect whether or not that deer has CWD just based on sampling that ear. So that's good for dead animals, but it's also good for live animals too. So it could be a real valuable tool for us as an agency. So we're gonna look at that for elk and see if that will hold true for elk like it does for white-tailed deer. Next, we're going to, The next objective is we're going to be looking at CWD prevalence in the hills. You know, we do have an idea of what we have, but we really haven't sampled at any great intensity. So we're ramping up that sampling in the Black Hills right now and looking for trying to establish a little better idea of prevalence across the hills. And with that, we're also going to estimate cow elk survival so we can relate CWD prevalence and how that's impacting survival. Next, please. So what did we do this last year? We collected about 425 samples from our harvested elk mostly. These samples included ear samples as well as the retropharyngeal lymph nodes. We had about 20 positive elk where we had good samples of both of those. Now we're in the process for putting all those samples together, and we're going to send these off to a lab in the University of Minnesota. And they're going to look at these samples using a new, relatively new technique, at least as far as CWD is concerned, called the RT-QuIC method. And there are very few labs in the nation that do this, so we're fortunate that we have some collaborators just across the border that are going to work with us on looking at elk ears. Next, please. All right, so what are we going to do this year for this elk research? We're going to continue our sampling. trying to get a better handle on prevalence, and again, trying to test this new method. And then this winter, we're going to begin elk captures, and we're going to be radio calling animals. Our goal, target goal, is 150 cows, so it's a pretty big target. But we're hoping to get a really good sample of cows in several different areas in the hills to look at not only survival, but other important factors of elk as well, because all of these will be GPS colored. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. I had their logo there on that last slide. They've been an important part of this project and many of our past projects as well. They really step up to the plate, provide a lot of funding that helps with calling these animals and capturing these animals. So they've been a great partner for managing elk in the Black Hills. And that's my updates for disease. I can jump right in, Madam Chair, if you want, into the objectives, or we can stop and talk about disease first. Up to you.
Do we have any questions from the commissioners? Commissioner Spring.
I was wondering, you have to send all these samples off to the lab, and they're held for quite a period of time from last fall, and you're sending them now. Is that, or did I misunderstand?
Through the chair. Yeah, Commissioner Spring, you're correct. We're holding them now. They'll be frozen samples, and that doesn't affect the validity of the tests.
Is it very expensive to have the testing equipment here in the state, or is that not feasible to have it, that you have to wait so long to get these results?
I'm not sure on the, to be honest, Commissioner Spring, on the RT Quick, and maybe Andrew's got some background on it here too. He's important part of this project and putting it together. But yeah, there are very few labs in the nation that actually can do this test, so I'm guessing that's a pretty costly setup.
Through the chair. So one thing we didn't mention about this study is that we obtained over $100,000 funding from APHIS, so there's a federal grant for mostly chronic wasting disease research. So we used a lot of that money, and in our collaboration with the University of Minnesota, they're actually purchasing some of the lab equipment to do this testing. So it is very specialized testing. What it does is it amplifies the tissue sample so they can even detect a really minute amount of the misfolded prion. So it is fairly expensive. With the lymph nodes, we can do that testing in South Dakota still, and send that to SDSU.
Was it quite expensive to have these tests done, or do they charge you, or is this just part of the study?
So for now, we're still in the testing phase. So once they get the equipment, it's relatively inexpensive to test, but to get the equipment and the lab set up, I believe they're at between $40,000 and $60,000 to get some of the equipment and supplies.
Any other questions?
Chair, real quick question for Andy and Andrew. How long does it take when a hunter submits a CWD sample to get results back? That might be a better question to ask.
Yeah, I'll take a stab at this. But for most samples, I think this year it's been within a week, 2 weeks max, would be my understanding of that.
Thank you.
Andy, I have a question for you real quick. You talked about the elk captures. Remind me again how many you're looking to capture during this?
Yeah, Madam Chair, we're looking at capturing 150. So this will be adult cow elk. We're looking at three different areas. Of course, elk congregate in the wintertime, so we might not have three really good areas. So we might just be a couple areas, but yeah, we're shooting for 150 elk.
Could you just kind of explain how you guys do that? What's the process of capturing an elk?
Yeah, so these will all be helicopter captures, and they're shot with a drug from the helicopter. They go down and they land. Some crew jump out and they put a collar on them. So we contract all of this out, and we've done this for years with deer and pronghorn and elk in the hills too. So it's a pretty good process, but yeah, that's pretty much how we'll do it. We'll start in January. It's nice to have good snow. It's nice to have good congregations of elk down south there where we can find them and get some collars up.
Very good. Commissioner Beast, did you have a question?
Yeah, Commissioner Beast, when an animal in the wild dies with CWD and that carcass disposes, is that soil can't contaminate from that, where other animals can come in and pick it up out of the soil and transfer and go? How long does that stay in the soil before it's not transferable again?
Yeah, through the chair, Commissioner Bees, that's a good question, and there's a lot of discussion around that topic right now, and I don't know if I have a black and white answer for you. A lot of it does depend on soil types too. Certain soils will hold those prions longer and it'll be infectious longer. There's also a lot of discussion and debate on, yes, it is possible, there is contamination in the soil, it is possible to get it, but at what rate are animals actually getting it from the soil contamination? There's also, you can get CWD from animal to animal contact, and there's a lot of discussion, is that more important than the actual environmental contamination? So there's not a lot of black and white from what I know on that, but it is possible for sure that the environment does get contaminated, and it can be for years and years.
Any other questions? All right, very good. Thank you both.
Okay, if it's all right, I'll continue on with the next topic, and that's population objectives. So for deer, we have kind of three main categories of population objectives that we look at. So first, hunt quality. So for our limited access areas, we actually have thresholds established for license density. And for the majority of our other seasons, we do have thresholds established for hunter success on our buck licenses. In one area of the state, we do have a population abundance objective. That's for whitetails in the Black Hills. But all of our units in the state, we have objectives for population change. And these objectives are really what drive our license numbers, in particular our antlerless license numbers. And in the interest of time, that's what I'm going to spend talking about here today. So population change, what are we talking about? We're talking about, do we want to increase deer in this area? Do we want to decrease deer in this unit? Or do we want to maintain? Of course, we use our biological data and our population modeling to assess where we're at with the deer population. I'm going to spend time next month talking about that. We'll bring forward our license recommendations and talking about where we think the deer populations are. But those are all the different data sources that staff across the state collect information on regarding our deer herds. And we'll talk about that next month. Another thing that is really important for establishing those objectives, just as important as the biological data, is the social data. We get a lot of input on deer populations in these units. We get input from our hunters on how many deer we should have. Of course, South Dakota is about 80% privately owned, right? And we get a lot of input from landowners on how many deer we should have out there in these different units. Of course, when we have a lot of deer, and we get things like deer vehicle collisions, we get input from other publics as well on how many deer we should be managing for in these units. Next, please. So one of the data points, I think, kind of relative to where we're at right now and today to talk about is winter severity. So in South Dakota, when we get severe winters, we can lose deer at different rates. Fawns that are going through their first winter, we're going to lose those at a much higher rate than we can lose adults too if the winter's bad enough. It does take a bad winter to kill adults, but it definitely does happen in the state. There's a couple different ways we can track this. If we had radar collared animals, we could quantify survival rates. Unfortunately, right now, we don't have radar collared animals in the part of the state where we're having most of the winter, the hard winter. Eastern South Dakota is seeing a hard winter. But one thing that we can do is we can keep track of mortalities that we do hear about and that we do verify. So we have field staff out there that are collecting this information every year, and it doesn't give us an exact number of winter mortality losses out there, but it does give us a relative idea of how bad the winter was from one year to the next and where we might be seeing some of those increased winter mortality rates in our deer herd. So this is something we'll continue to monitor and continue to watch and definitely take into consideration when we bring our license recommendations to you. Next, please. So related to a hard winter and the biological data are the social data that we deal with. And I think Emma Keiser is going to talk about deer depredation next month, but here's a quick graph on where we are right now statewide for our deer depredation calls. These are requests for services from private landowners that have too many deer on them right now. Of course, hard winters do that. We all know that. But definitely, when we get this many calls in some of these areas, this is part of that social data input that we're definitely going to consider when we determine objectives for all of our deer units. Next, please. So that all said, this is where we are for those deer objectives for whitetails. The top map is where we were last time we met in 2021, and we set those objectives for 2 years. And the bottom map is where we are right now, with those objectives being set again for another 2 years. And you can see the areas in blue are where we want to, one level or another, increase deer populations, meaning we don't have enough deer there. Green is where we're just about right. We want to maintain deer numbers. And red is where we feel like we have too many and we need to decrease deer populations. And you can see, based on the previous slides I had and looking at some of the winter that we're receiving in the eastern part of the state, especially in the southeast there, a lot of our objectives are changing from we want to increase deer to we now want to decrease deer populations. So definitely some of that social data driving some of these objectives. Next, please. And here's for mule deer. Again, previous objectives on the top map there and where we are right now on the bottom one. There are a couple additional colors here that we've further defined on that bottom map I'll talk about, and that's the secondary and tertiary range. So a lot of South Dakota isn't great mule deer habitat. It's just not mule deer habitat, and no matter what we do in those areas, we're not going to have big mule deer populations. And so we're just acknowledging that this is, you know, those areas are secondary and tertiary range, and it's really not realistic for us to put objectives on those. But what we are doing is we're not offering any no licenses for mule deer in those areas, whether it's firearm, archery, or muzzleloader. So pretty much have removed most of the antlerless harvest in that secondary and tertiary range. But you can see in the rest of the range, for most of South Dakota, we want a lot more mule deer. But we are approaching objectives and had objective actually in a couple of units there up in the northwest in Perkins and Corson County. And that should be it. And sure, stay around for questions.
Any questions? Commissioner Beast.
Commissioner Beast, on their substantially increased areas like in the Black Hills, what's your method of to do that? Or with the coyotes and lions and the hills, when they go to eggs, or what's your process to substantially increase?
Yeah, through the chair, Commissioner Beast, that's a good question. And obviously, one of the main tools that we have to drive deer populations, and you've acknowledged there are several things that can affect deer populations and survival in particular, but one of the main tools that we have at our discretion and that we're going to talk about here today and next month are our license numbers. So the number of tags and the type of tags and trying to remove, especially like in the Black Hills where we want to increase populations, trying to remove all that doe harvest is our objective in those areas.
Any other questions? Commissioner Spring.
On the prairie in quite a few areas in the West River last year, Meade County, some of Butte County, there was tremendous in the last 2 years, EHD problems, which knocked it down. But I see in the deal with the mentors that you have a bunch of licenses, the whitetails got hurt real bad in a lot of years, and in my area it's lucky if there's 20% of the whitetail deer that there was previous. Between the two EHD deals and last December storm, it's thinned them down to very, very few. I was in hopes that we might be able to cut back in those areas of metro doe tags, especially on the rifle. Something to keep in mind when you set that for next month.
Any other questions from commissioners?
Yes.
Commissioner Whitmire.
Commissioner Whitmire, backing up to the to the whitetail deer maps. In the northeast, we gained, I guess, in Brown County and the two to the west there. got more deer than what we had wanted. Did you see a reduction in hunter success or anything, or, you know, or how, you know, I mean, you try really hard, and you guys usually do such a great job, but when you get a tough winter like this one where it set in before deer season started, I'm just kind of curious, does that have an adverse effect where we're just not harvesting does? Is that what you're seeing, you know, as far as, you know, why we've got a larger increase of our, desire to decrease further on those populations where we're just not quite getting there?
Yeah, through the chair, Commissioner Whitmire. I think I understand your question right. Are you referencing like Edmonds and McPherson? And
yeah, I think Brown County there for example, okay. And Edmonds.
So those units changed from we wanted more, and now we're about where we want to be, okay. Right?
You wanted to increase in 21, 22. They were in slight increase, and now they're in. Maintained. Sorry. I thought that was a slight decrease. It's kind of hard to get that color in the lower right left-hand corner to transfer to what yeah. The color is up there.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's reflective of, like I said, a lot of that biological and social input that regional staff and folks on the ground are evaluating when they determine, you know, what's the best direction for deer in this unit. And, yeah, it's changed from where we wanted more, and now we're like, we got enough.
Okay.
So you would anticipate an increase in you know our attempt would be to increase harvest on antlerless deer in some of those areas when you see a shift in objective like that. If it's going the other way, you're going to see a decrease in licenses like Commissioner Spring was talking about, where we might have less white-tailed deer in an area where we're going to be decreasing licenses in some of those areas.
Admittedly, I've got a color handicap, so the cone at the lower left-hand corner is in.
Okay,
the angle is inversely. So thank you.
So just to follow up, next month Andy will come and give all the biological data, go through some of the modeling exercises. In particular, in the Northeast, there we flew the entire area, and we have really good counts on deer up there. So that was extremely timely this winter with all the depredation we're seeing to have really good numbers. For example, Clark County there is pink, and that is one of the few units that we flew this past year that has a decrease objective, and that was because with those flights we could tell exactly where those deer were this winter.
Hmm. Very interesting. Any other questions from the commission? The secretary, yes.
Can you guys please just go over the timeline of how the next steps work with deer recommendations for the commissioners?
Through the chair. So after the public hearing here, I believe we will go to item 14, which will be bringing up the 8 deer seasons with the exception of archery deer, and we would ask the commission to open those chapters, and all we'll simply be doing is opening the chapters for public comment the next 30 days. There will be a couple minor recommended changes that you'll see, but for all intents and purposes, it's just simply opening the chapter to allow some public comment over the next 30 days. We'll analyze the data a little bit more. And then beginning in the next meeting, we'll go through with unit-specific license recommendations after Andy gives another full presentation. And at that point, we'll talk about things exactly like Commissioner Spring brought up. What would recommendations be to antlerless licenses and specific units?
Any questions, concerns at this point? So we have a proposal, and we need to have a motion to approve it.
Madam Chair, there will be multiple action sheets related to deer seasons. We'll come back to that later on in the agenda, now that the presentation is done at the right time. But right now would be to go over to the public hearing and open forum based on the agenda.
Thank you both. That was very good.